back on the hardwoods on Wednesday evening, taking on NC State. He's Lipscomb men's basketball coach Casey Alexander. He's on the line with us. Casey, how you doing?
Great. How are you guys?
Well, I would expect you to be doing great. We're doing fantastic. This is a great time of year, and I know you're disappointed, but your kids get to keep playing, and you guys have been taking care of business. I'll tell you what. I walked into the gym yesterday to get a little quick workout on a Sunday. They had your game on, and I looked over, and I went, whoa! And then I started working out and watching the game. You guys, UNC Greensboro was a team people like you felt like should been a, you know, had a real case to get in.
Well, the committee had them the first team out,
and you guys went into their place and ripped them apart yesterday. What went well for you guys other than the obvious? It was a win.
Yeah, well, I wish I knew the simple formula and we could bottle it up and just use it going forward. But you know, it was. I'll say I didn't anticipate it going that way. I mean, I thought it would be a great game. I thought our teams were very, very similar and kind of on the same level. I looked up with whatever it was, 6-7 minutes ago, and we're up 27 on the road against a really good team. And I thought, how in the world did this happen? So it was a good win, though. Our guys are playing hard, and I think we've moved on from NCAA tournament and Liberty letdown, and glad we're still playing.
Do you get the vibe, you know, either pregame, warm-ups, the beginning of a game, do you ever try to privately get a vibe of your team like, man, our kids are ready to play today, or, oh boy, we've got some work ahead of us. I don't feel like it's there. Do you do that as a coach?
I think about it and I worry about it, but I try to put no stock into it, honestly.
Okay.
I mean, just the longer you do it, the more you realize that your own intuition, it's just not right often enough, you know. And you know, you can cover everything. You could say, hey, they're a little bit too loose, but that ends up being a good thing. You can say, hey, they don't seem ready, and that ends up being a good thing. So just have to trust them, you know, put the things in place as a coach that you want, in order to get them ready to play, and then you just got to trust that they'll be ready to do it, you know. And then the other part that we all forget is, you know, whoever your opponent is, well, they got a 50-50 stake in the game, you know, so they're going to dictate how the game starts as well.
Yeah.
You know, they may not be ready, or they may play great, or, you know, you never know. So.
Good point. After the natural letdown on Selection Sunday, what did you say to your team to get ready for this spot where now you've beaten Davidson and UNC Greensboro?
Nothing magical. We talked a lot in the interim, in that week between the Liberty loss and finding out what our next plan was of just, you know, I knew human nature, they're disappointed. We're not going to have great practices. We don't even know when we're playing, who we're playing, where we're playing, anything like that. So just, you know, just grind out a couple of days right here, guys, because once you get back into the swing of practice and playing in a tournament again, then your energy level and your excitement for being, you know, for continuing the season will be there. And I can promise you, if you win a game, you'll feel it exactly like I'm telling you that you will. And that's kind of what happened. I referenced, this is really odd, but my Belmont history, we played in the tournament, NCAA tournament, 2006, 7, and 8. All right. In 2009, we were in the CIT, not even the NIT. But we went to Evansville and won. And for the people in the program during those years, that was as good of a win, as fun of a time as anything that we did during that time. And so I referenced that, and it's turned out to be true for us here now in the NIT.
I guess you're not surprised that Liberty was able to get a game, beat an SEC team in round one. I guess you're not surprised Belmont was able to go to Dayton and win their game and then play Maryland all the way to the end. I guess that didn't surprise you at all?
No, completely not surprised. You know, no other way to put it. I had both of them winning, as a matter of fact. Mm. You know, I'm not much of a public bracket guy, but you asked me who I thought would win, legitimately thought would win those games, and I legitimately thought that Liberty and Belmont would win.
Casey Alexander on the line with us, Lipscomb men's basketball coach. You hear football coaches always talk about, oh, you know, well, it's not the bowl that we wanted, but, you know, we'll take advantage of this. We get to spend more time with the kids. We get extra practices and an extra game, and that'll help us for next year. Does that apply to basketball, this extra basketball? Does that help you for next year?
I think the residual of just postseason play helps. you know, I don't think it's going to help us be more ready in November next year, you know, or even through the summer. But, you know, I think where it'll come into play is, you know, if we're in, if we have the opportunity to continue playing in the postseason, that's where you'll really benefit. You know, football's different. They get, that gives them 15 practices, and those guys are animals, and they spend all day, every day out there, you know, doing what they do. Basketball, this time of year, you're hardly even practicing. You know, I mean, we're trying to make it as short as we can almost every day we go out there, just because the mental and physical part of the game by this time of the season, we're, you know, it's the most critical part of keeping your guys ready to go. So it's really two different animals.
Casey Alexander is with us. Lipscomb taking on NC State in the NIT quarterfinal, one win away from the trip to Madison Square Garden in New York. And, Coach, I want to ask you about NC State and the matchup that you have there. It's interesting because NC State, you guys, and a number of other teams were getting tossed around in those days leading up to the selection show, and all the profiles, everybody was watching closely. And so now you get to play one of them. So what do you see with NC State? What's the key matchup?
Well, you know, there's obviously there's a talent disparity. You know, there's not a guy on our team that was recruited at that level, really, and there's not a guy on their team that was that chose NC State over somebody like us. And so they've got bigger, stronger, faster, better talent, you know, and that's the strength of their team. It's just, you know, their coach keeps it pretty simple and just allows them to make plays. And so if we are, if we're hesitant, if we can't play with confidence on the defensive end or even the offensive end, you know, then we're going to be asking for trouble. But if we go in there with a mentality that we belong, which I think we do, and that we can win the game, which I think we can, then I think we'll give ourselves a pretty good fighting chance.
I'm sure you're lost in the preparation for your team. I don't know how much you've seen of the big dance here, but yeah. One thing that is interesting to me, since they put the rule in that you have basically one less timeout than you used to have in the second half. You have one that you have to use in the first half, and then you can have as many as three going down the stretch. A lot of times during the course of the game, a team will need to call one to stop the momentum for the other team, and that leaves a lot of times two down the stretch when a team is down by say, you know, 4 to 6 points with, say, 3-4 minutes to go. It's interesting to me how many times I see a team call timeout to leave them with one or none with still a lot of time left where you might need one in the back pocket. And a lot of times it's after they make a basket. You notice how many times a team will make a three and they'll want to stop the clock right there, sort of feel the momentum a bit. That surprised me some.
Well, I understand what you're saying. And obviously, you know, timeouts in general are pretty philosophical. All of us know those moments where everybody in the gym thinks, okay, you better call a timeout right here. You know, we all get that one. But the rest of it is you know, having a good, you know, a good pulse on your team and what they can do out there on their own. You know, a lot of it is, you know, how comfortable are you at the end of games? You know, there's some coaches who, you know, would not dare have their team, you know, offensively in a tight game at the end of the game, just ad lib or even try to follow a call from the bench. You know, they want to call a timeout. They want to bring their team over. They want to get guys exactly where they want them, you know, and they'll do that possession after possession after possession. You know, I'd go the other way. You know, we almost never call situational timeouts at the end of the game. We would like to play on the fly. Our guys know what they're doing, but we don't want to orchestrate quite that much. The timeout after a score, I actually like that philosophy. I'm more willing to do that as well. You know, and if I don't feel like I've got to call it because of the momentum, then I would rather call it after a score and get our defense set, probably sub a guy or two that's a defensive-oriented sub, get ready for their possession, that sort of thing. I would never want to squash our momentum, but if I feel like it's not disruptive, I like to call timeout after scores as well. Ben Howland's he's the main guy that I know that does that a lot, and he runs out of timeouts more than anybody that, you know, any coach that I've seen in a long time.
All right, here's one more coaching philosophy question, coach's perspective. I'm surprised how many times a team with, say, 1.8, 2.3 seconds on the clock has the ball 94 feet away, and they need a quick shot. Either they're down by, you know, they've got to have a three. They've got to have a really quick score. They're content to throw it in at their own free throw line where the guy takes one dribble and takes a 60-footer or a half-court shot when you know the ball has to go the length of you have to try for some version of the Christian Laettner play. Right. I'm just stunned how many teams don't have
totally
something drawn up.
Totally with you. And I'll tell you, my theory on that would be that they just don't have – because they're used to calling timeouts and orchestrating all that, if they don't have a timeout, they don't have – their kids don't know what to do in that situation. And so they just defer to default to what you – to the situation you just described. I'll do you one better. I mean, I think that is totally true. I've made that same statement many, many, many times. But one better is, okay, it's a two-possession game with 5 or 6 or 7 seconds left to go. You know, and they do the same thing. They throw it in. It takes them 4 or 5 seconds to get the ball down the floor. If the shot goes in, there's 6 tenths left. We had no chance to win. You know, you've got to score immediately to give yourself a chance to have the second possession. So you pretty much have to throw it long. And I mean, nobody does that. Nobody does that. They throw it in the backcourt.
Guy dribbles all the way down.
And then it's like, okay, well, we may have scored or we may not have, but the game's over. So big deal.
Tallest player you've ever had to go up against was?
Oh, God. Go up against? I mean, geez, once they hit 7 feet, I mean, take Taco out of the equation. I mean, they're all pretty tall. We had a kid, David Vachon, a few years ago for us that was 7'2" or 7'3". I mean,
really?
He was a big old boy. But Taco Fall, that's
isn't that crazy watching him?
It's unbelievable. And it's, he's not Manute Bol out there either. He's not like
getting
bones and everything else. I mean, he is a big old rascal for sure.
It doesn't even look like he has to jump. I mean, the first play of the game, he gets his own rebound and just slams it home, and I'm not sure his feet left the floor.
The last one on that, on the controversial, did it hit the rim or not? I mean, it was just kind of I'll just put this back in like a Nerf goal.
It did look like a big brother on the Nerf goal, no question. But, the thing, I didn't envy the referee because he's so big, and then you got Zion Williamson challenging and trying to create contact. There were several, I don't want to say collisions, but confrontations right at the basket. What do you do if you're the referee? I mean, that's a tough one.
That one is an easy one. Whether or not Zion pushed off, blocked charge, that one's a hard one. But the foul that they called is an easy one. He's a secondary defender. He's in the circle. There's legitimate contact on the shooter. He didn't leave his feet, so that's an automatic call, in my opinion. They'll miss it some, and if he jumps vertically, then it's not a foul. But if you're in that circle as a secondary defender and you don't leave your feet and there's legitimate contact, it's supposed to be a foul 100% of the time.
Go get him in Raleigh, and then we'll have you back on, and you and Willie can swap NIT stories in Madison Square Garden. Yeah,
gotcha.
When both of you had hair.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Casey.
All right.
Casey Alexander, that's Lipscomb's basketball coach. We'll come back with more of Darren and Donnick next.